three stanzas, and after that, Brother Webb will bring us our opening prayer. I've heard an old, old story, how a Savior came from glory, how he gave his life on Calvary to save a wretch like me. I've heard about his groaning, of his precious blood's atoning. Then I repented of my sins and won the victory. Oh, victory in Jesus, my Savior forever. He sought me and bought me with his redeeming blood. He loved me ere I knew him, and all my love is due him. He plunged me to victory beneath the cleansing flood. I've heard about his healing, of his cleansing power revealing, how he made the lame to walk again and caused the blind to see. And then I cried, dear Jesus, come and heal my broken spirit. I then obeyed his blessed commands and gained the victory. Oh, victory in Jesus, my Savior forever. He sought me and bought me with his redeeming blood. He loved me ere I knew him, and all my love is due him. He plunged me to victory beneath the cleansing flood. I've heard about a mansion he has built for me in glory, and I heard about the street of gold beyond the crystal sea, about the angels singing and the old redemption story, and some sweet day I'll sing up there.
Let those that are following on our side, make a man for 668, come to Jesus. We'll sing all three stanzas. Come to Jesus, He will save you, though your sins as friends unfold. If you give your heart to Jesus, He will make it white as snow. Come to Jesus, come to Jesus, come to Jesus, come to
thank you.
like to do is to do a little recap on Job chapter 1. And then we're going to go into last Sunday, if you were here Sunday morning when I preached about living Job, you would hear some of the statistics that I went into. And what it is the worth of Job. I never did before in this whole study go through and break down his financial worth, what he's actually worth. Last week on Sunday, during the morning service, I did just that. And so I'd like to go back and let us look at that. And again, we remember in Job, and let's keep this in remembrance as we look at Eliphaz and how he portrays Job as being somehow secretly in sin, somebody who's a hypocrite, somebody who's basically living a sinful life, because that's the only reason all these bad things are happening to him, is because he's living a bad life. And again, in verse 1, it says, there was a man in the land of Uz where his name was Job, and the man was perfect, and that's blameless and upright. And so in order to be blameless and upright, it just means he was a person that followed the commandments of God. So he was a man that truly followed the commandments of God. And so he eschewed evil. So he basically stayed away from evil. He followed God's commands. And it was born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. So he was very blessed to have 7 sons, 7 namesakes to take out after his name, 7 sons and 3 daughters. And his worth, it says 7,000 sheep. So I want to look at substance was 7,000 sheep. So we'll look at the sheep. And today's a female sheep in U.S. today, you're looking at upwards between starting at the low end, 150. But of the stock that that Job most likely had, you're looking at something up to $300. And so it states that with Job and his worth, if they're worth up to $300 and he's got 7,000 sheep, you're looking at somewhere in $1 million. So $1 million just for the sheep. And again, the Bible goes on to say that he was the richest man in all of Asia. And so then he had 3,000 camels. Now the camels, if you look at 3,000, his figure, and they're estimated about 1,200 each in U.S., so 1,200 would be the worth of them in today's standards. So 300 of those, you're looking at a good chunk, $25 million. So $25 million just for the camels, right? So he's already had $1 million for the sheep, $25 million for the camels, and the cattle, which the Bible says he had a yoke of oxen, at 500. So with this 500, and then he had the she-asses also, but we'll look at the bulls. A good one, about 1,500 pounds, would be a small one. But you will have, if you just look at half that price per pound, if you're looking at, they said the calves are selling around $2 a pound on the hoof. A bull ox will weigh anyway from 1,500 pounds for a smaller animal. And it says you have an animal worth about $2,000. So with the 500 ox, you're looking at $2 million. So it had $2 million with that. Then with the donkeys or the she-asses, you're looking at about $50,000 with that, with the she-asses. And so they're looking at, they're conservatively about $100 each. So that with him having, with him having 500 she-asses, so you're looking at $50,000 for the she-asses. And then all together, all of his animals together, you're looking at conservatively around about $28 million. So he had a lot of money, you know. So he'd be worth about $28 million in today's standard, $28 million. So again, when all this happens, in verse 6 when it says, there was a day when the sons of God came and presented themselves before the Lord, and Satan was among them. And then he answered and said, "Word, you know, from whence comest thou?" Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro the earth and from walking up and down it." Now, he asked a question, "Have you considered my servant Job?" Right? In verse 8, and the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth?" So there was nobody apparently in the earth following God as upright as Job was at that time. And he said again, "A perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil." So he respects God, he honors God, he reverenced God. That's what that fear means. It's like a sailor that sails a ship. They fear the ocean. What does it mean? They're scared of it? They don't want to go into the ocean? No, they respect the power of it. They know that the ocean is a very powerful thing. It can take you where you want it to go, and it can also destroy and kill you as well. And so they understand that the power of the ocean is something that beyond their control as well. And so they fear it, they respect it, they honor it. And so again, Job, the devil says, "You've given him all these things. If you take all these things away, he'll curse you in your face," right? So he goes away, then all of a sudden he loses all of that money, that $28 million, gone in an instant. His 10 kids, 7 sons and 2 daughters, 3 daughters, gone in an instant. So he goes from being the richest man in the world to having nothing. He goes to being a father of 10 to a father of none. So he's lost all of his kids, right? And at this time, you would think that his wife would be a comfort to him. But I'm sure she was, but later on she wasn't. Because after that, the devil attacked him with his body. He put those open boils all over his face, from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. So he's miserable. His wife says, "Why don't you just curse God and die? Get it over with." Then his buddies come, Eliphaz, and they start accusing him of some secret sin. And then we understand when Job rebuttals them that he's trying to tell them he hasn't committed a secret sin. And then he starts talking about the nature of God. Because we understand that the rain falls on the just as well as the unjust, right? God doesn't look at a person that says, "Oh, you're evil, I'm going to do bad things to you. Oh, you're good, I'm going to give you all the good stuff." Because guess what? All of us here that are fought good through Christ Jesus, you're made good, right? Through Christ. So if we obey the gospel, we're considered good if we continue to follow his command. Why are we not living in Highland Park? Why don't we have mansions? Why are we not driving Mercedes-Benz and all these Volvos and all these expensive cars? Why do we not have millions of dollars in our bank? How many in here have at least 1 million? Not even 1,000, much less. Okay, so we don't have no millionaires okay. Thousandaires? All right, we got a thousandaire. Woo, rich person in the room. Hundredaires. Got some hundredaires. I know we got some hundredaires in the house. There we go. And some zeronaires, right? Got nothing there. We got some zeronaires in the house. There we go. Maybe physically and with money, but you're worth millions more than millions spiritually. So. But that's pretty much it. So basically, you're good people, you follow God, but you're not rich. So that can't work. That's not true. It doesn't mean that God is going to destroy you. God is going to put the smackdown on you because you're evil. Because evil people, guess what? They live a good life. There's evil people. I mean, you've seen a movie, Goodfellas, right? The Goodfellas had it good. That's what it came. You know? Goodfellas go to prison. They're eating steak. They got lobster, they got shrimp, you know, and they got all these things. And money does a lot, you know, allows you to be able to do El Chapo. You know, El Chapo had a lot of power, has a lot of power. End up in prison, got out of prison, right? They let him out. Now, he probably has a lavish lifestyle with beautiful homes. He's got millions and millions of dollars. He's got people that have fallen killed for him, right? So, but the thing about it is, Is he a good person? Does that mean that God has blessed El Chapo because he's a good guy? And all of Job's friends, their philosophy, worldly philosophy, would say that. If you're having a bad time and things are bad in your life, it's because you're doing something evil. It's because you're doing something bad that God doesn't like. Because God only blesses good people. So you look at all the people in the world with all the millions of dollars and all the globalists around the world and you say, oh, those are good people. Yeah, those people could care less about God. A lot of them, not all, but you got a very few millionaires that are Christians. But for the most off, you got millionaires, you got billionaires, okay? You have some that are worth, families that are worth trillions, got trillions of dollars. And trust me, they're not going to church every Sunday worshiping God, okay? And that means that they're blessed financially. So God's allowing them to have all this luxury here on this earth. And again, we get to Eliphaz and all the rest of them that are accusing, falsely accusing Job of doing something bad secretly. And I told you about the fact that we have the same situation where you're going through hard times and you hope a family member or a friend, somebody that you love, will help build you up. And then they actually make you feel worse, you know, once they start opening their mouth and talking. Okay, now what I want to do is we're going to finish up Eliphaz. Eliphaz is talking to Job, and some of the scholars that translate this, I guess they don't even care. Kaufman, the one I was using, Kaufman doesn't even care to translate what Eliphaz says because it's meaningless. But I just thought it would be good, so we're going to do 16 through 30, chapter 16, 17 through 35. So let's go ahead and turn over to chapter 15. Because that's where we're going to end, but we're going to do something a little different before we end it. So I just want you to be ready. We're going to turn to chapter 15 in Job, and we're going to start with 17. And I'm going to need a reader to come up here because you're going to read 17 all the way to 35. So where's that hand? Where's my reader? Okay, come on up. And we're going to go ahead and read it, and then we're going to break it down. I guess we'll go ahead and end it with an open. I'm going to start asking you guys questions. I need to know how this class is going as far as what we're really truly learning about this study. So 17 all the way to 35, my brother. Just let them know what version of the Bible you're reading from. Okay. NIV. Yeah, we'll start with Job chapter 15. And it's Eliphaz is speaking once again. Worldly wisdom. Chapter 15, verses 17 through 35. Let's see if that thing is on. I thought that was on. I'm sorry. Where's Joe? I thought Curtis sounded low. There's a button. Not getting to it. If not, I might have to. Well, there's a little button underneath there. You see that little button? It looks like it's on.
Yeah, it's on. You see.
Testing. It's just low. Okay. Now I got to figure out what I did with this. Alrighty. I had to hold my mic too.
Listen to me, and I will explain to you. Let me tell you what I have seen, what the wise have declared, hiding nothing received from their ancestors, to whom alone the land was given, when no foreigner moved among them. All his days the wicked man suffered torment, the ruthless man through all the years stored up for him. Terrifying sounds filled his ears. When all seemed well, marauders attacked him. He despairs of escaping the realm of darkness. He is marked for the sword. He wanders about for food like a vulture. He knows the day of darkness is at hand. Distress and anguish fill him with terror. Trouble overwhelms him, like a king poised to attack, because he shakes his fist at God. and vaults himself against the Almighty, defiant charging against him with a thick, strong shield. Though his face is covered with fat and his waist bulges with flesh, he will inhabit ruined towns and houses where no one lives, houses crumble to rubble. He will no longer be rich, and his wealth will not endure, nor will his possessions spread over the land. He will not escape the darkness. A flame will wither his shoots, and the breath of God's mouth will carry him away. Let him not deceive himself by trusting what is worthless, for he will get nothing in return. Before his time, he will wither, and his branches will not flourish. He will be like a vine stripped of its unripe grapes, like an olive tree shedding its blossoms, for the company of the godless will be barren, and fire will consume the tent of those who love bribes. They conceive trouble and give birth to evil. Their womb fastens deceit.
Okay, thank you, my brother. All righty, so again, we have to break it down sometimes in modern day English so that we understand what Eliphaz is talking about. And again, I had a great theologian, or I guess a scholar, I would say, Kaufman, who we use in his commentaries. Kaufman wouldn't even try to figure out. He said, because what he's saying is it's wrong anyway. So why would he sit there and try to dissect what Eliphaz is saying when Eliphaz is wrong? So I found another scholar that was willing to do it. So I said, let's go ahead and do that. Eliphaz, let's look at verse 17. Verse 17, I will show thee, hear me, that which I've seen, I will declare. Eliphaz is now about to quote a whole collection of wise sayings from the ancients, all good enough in themselves, but sinfully misapplied to the case of Job. See, he was going to use somebody would use a great philosopher and come to you and say, well, you know, Nietzsche says that a person that lives on the streets must have done something to deserve being on the streets. So if you're living on the streets, it's something you did. That's Eliphaz in today's society. So he would blame you. This would be your buddy, Eliphaz, blaming you, saying that the reason you're on the street is because it's something that you did to get yourself there. Okay? No blame. It's up to you. He's pointing fingers. Verse 19, when he says, unto whom alone the earth was given, he was very likely referring to the Israelites who got possession of the promised land of God, right? And no stranger being permitted to dwell in it. So, and the old inhabitants were to be exterminated. So some think that Noah and his sons may have been intended, as is certain the whole earth was given to them after the flood, of course. They were the only ones there. When there were no strangers, at that time, no other family members, no mankind. They had to produce mankind, so we all came from Noah and his family. But the word seemed to apply more clearly to the Israelites, so that's just one of those sayings of his. In verse 20, the wicked man travaileth with pain. So what he's saying is, if you're having pain, Job has open sores and boils all over his body, and his body is disfigured. His face is so disfigured they couldn't even recognize him, his own friends. So I'm going to tell you now, I'm going to get in your face and go, you know, the wicked man is the one that has boils all on his face and is in pain. Whoa, you tell me, man, I've got rheumatoid arthritis all on my body, I'm in pain every day. So you give me that information, so I'm privy to that information. And then I come and say, you know, the wicked people are the ones that have pain, like rheumatoid arthritis and all that stuff. That comes from wicked living. That's the philosophy right there. So I'm right in your face. I know your situation. Eliphaz knows that Job is in pain and knows why he's in pain. And then is going to call the man wicked and say that you're wicked because you're in pain. See, that's the kind of philosophy that Eliphaz had. This most forcible truth of life, of sin, is a life of misery that he will, sin must suffer, is what he's saying. If you sin, you're going to suffer. That's it. You did something wicked, now that's why you're in pain. God hit you with that pain. So that means that no good person is in pain. So if you are a follower of God and you're in pain, you better rethink it. You may not be a child of God if you're in pain, because that means that no child of God is going to experience any pain, right? No child of God is going to be poor. Come on. Nothing bad is going to happen to a child of God. I remember in the first century when the Romans were in power and the emperor considered himself God, weren't there people that were Christians, good Christians, that were fed to the lions? Okay, were they wicked? No. They followed God and they were fed to the lions. They followed God, they were sawed in half. They were followed God and they were filleted, their skins peeled from their bodies, okay? Thrown in ant piles, boiled in oil. That's what they tried to do to John. And Apostle John escaped and went to the Isle of Patmos. They were trying to boil him in oil, okay, to kill him. And a lot of the saints died. The apostles were murdered. So you're trying to tell me the apostles were evil because they were murdered in all kinds of ways? You know, John the Baptist, good guy, right? Good. What happened to John the Baptist? Head on a platter, okay? What did he do? And then there was another good guy, I think Yahshua or something like that, I think they called his name, right? Maybe the Son of God. What happened to him? He had a good life on this planet, didn't he? He had friends that loved him. He had a big mansion to put to lay down in, right? He had all the gold that he could eat, had a silver spoon, beautiful food, and lived a luxurious life, right? Massages every day. And then he just laid down one day and went to sleep and never woke up, right? No, that's not what happened. He was a man of sorrow, right? He took upon our pains. He was beat. He was tormented. Had his whiskers pulled out of his face. They lied upon him, okay? He was betrayed. All horrible things happened to him. But guess what? He was a good guy. Okay, the Messiah was a good guy, but all these bad things happened to him anyway. Same thing with Job, right? Job, good guy, upright, eschewed evil. But still, all these horrible things came down on him. And then in verse 21, a dreadful sound is in my ear. If he be an oppressor or tyrant, he can have no rest. He is full of suspicions that the cruelties he has exercised on others shall one day be exercised on himself. For even in his prosperity, he may expect a destroyer to rush upon him. Job, you should have expected all these bad things to happen, man. Now he's saying that you shouldn't have any rest because you're exercising evil on other people. See, the evil that you did, this secret evil that you did on somebody else, is coming back to bite you. That was his philosophy. He was wrong, though, because Job didn't have any of these secret things. He was not a tyrant. He didn't have suspicions because of his evil, you know, mispractices. Verse 22 says that he shall return out of darkness. That he shall return out of darkness. So that's almost like you're telling me that I'm in darkness. It's like, Brother Eric, man, stop living that sinful life, dude. You know, that wouldn't have happened to you. You wouldn't have almost broke your neck and be partially paralyzed and have the spinal cord injuries and be dealing with what you're dealing with now and the financial issues. You got to be having some secret sin, man. Stop sinning. Stop living in darkness, Brother Eric. Straighten up. Repent, right? This man is falsely judging, unrighteously judging Job once again. So, and then they go on to talk about what that verse means some more, but that's the gist of it. Verse 23, and again, we're in Job, still Job chapter 15. He wandered abroad for bread. He reduced to a state of the uttermost indigence. He who was once in affluence requires a morsel of bread and can scarcely by begging procure enough to sustain life. Oh, the guy that used to be the richest guy in Asia, ha ha ha, now you're begging for crumbs, buddy. It's like, wow, that's cold-blooded. So if you sit there and tell me that you lost everything, that you had your money invested in a 401, and something happened and you lost all your money, the economy went sour, you lost all of your money, and I'm going to laugh at you and tell you, well, buddy, you know, you must have done something bad, or you wouldn't have lost all your money, you know, and that's exactly what Eliphaz is saying, and then make fun of you, like, well, you used to You used to be a good giver. You used to, you know, drive fancy cars. Now you don't have a car at all. I heard you lost your house. You don't have a house at all now. You used to have all that food, and now you have to beg for food. You know, making fun of his situation. So that was not a good friend at all. In verse 24, it says, trouble and anguish shall make him afraid. He shall be in continual fear of death, being now brought down by adversity and stripped of all the goods which he had got by oppression. So he's accusing Job of oppressing other people, like poor people, in order to get rich. His life is a mark for the meanest assassin. So now, since you've been so ugly and evil towards other people, Job, now God has sent the assassin on you to kill all of your, to take all your property, to kill your servants, and even kill your kids. Man, what a friend. What a friend. I want a friend like Eliphaz. What about you? Who wants a buddy like that? Goodness gracious. Now, this man is supposed to be trying to help Job. Verse 25, he stretched out his hand against God. While in power, he thought himself supreme. It's like, man, you were arrogant once you were the richest man in all of Asia, had that $28 million, you thought you were something. Ha, look at you now. Now, do we do that? Yes. Because think about a celebrity. And the one I'm going to age myself. But you remember MC Hammer? Okay, MC Hammer, you know, he can't touch this. No. You know, and all of a sudden, you couldn't touch him. I mean, this man was the most famous rapper of all time at that point. He was everywhere with the big pants, you know, doing that dance. And I'm telling you, he was famous. But the man didn't forget get his friends. Secretly, nobody knew this. He was helping people in his neighborhood, people he grew up with. He was trying to pull all those people up with him, okay? His posse was all of his friends, the people that lived in the poor neighborhood where he lived. Then he lost everything, and what did people do? Made fun of him. Made fun of him. You know, it's like, man, ha, 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 you know, you used to be so thin, look at you now. You know, that kind of thing. But that's what celebrities do. You build a celebrity up, and then you tear them down, right? That happens every time. Britney Spears, all of them, you can name them, you know. The ones that we build up, and then you just tear them down. Verse 26. He runneth upon him. His prosperity observed that this, it says that this refers to, he runneth upon him, that God, who is like a mighty conqueror, a conquering hero, marches against the ungodly. So basically what he's saying, that God is the one that marched on you, buddy. Because you're wicked, because you've done all these horrible things to poor people, because you were arrogant when you had all that money. And now he sent an assassin to attack you. That means attack your finances, attack your kids, kill, take all your kids away from you, and attack your body. And you're probably going to die soon, is what he, you know, what Eliphaz believed. In verse 27, because he covereth his face, he has lived in luxury and excess. Okay, so you've lived in luxury and excess like a man overloaded with flesh. He cannot defend himself against the strong grip of his adversity. Now you lived a good life. Now bad stuff's happened to you. You don't know what to do. And and then they go into other things as well that's symbolic of that. And I don't want to go into that. But it says that to the lust of power and the schemes of ambition, there are no bounds. But see the end of such persons, a haughty spirit precedes a fall. Their palaces become desolate, and their heaven is reduced to chaos. So in other words, yeah, you had it good on this earth, but because of your wickedness, because of your evilness and selfishness, and because you had a superiority towards other people, God has made your empire desolate. He's destroyed everything you've had, Job. In verse 28, he dwelleth in desolate cities. It's sometimes the fate of a tyrant to be obliged to take up his habitation in some of those cities which have been ruined by his war. So basically it's like, okay, your city's destroyed, your homestead is destroyed, and then you have to go to a desolate city and start all over again, is what he's saying to Job. God has made you put your house and your homestead in ruin. So you have to go to a desolate city to start over again. Verse 29, he shall not be rich. So he's doing a prediction here, like a prophet. He's like, you've lost everything, Job, and you ain't going to be rich anymore. See, this is your downfall, Job. You're never going to be rich again, okay? You'll never have kids again. You'll never have anything again. God is about to destroy you completely. The whole of what follows to the end of the chapter seems to be directed against Job himself, whom Eliphaz indirectly accuses of having been a tyrant and an oppressor. The threatened evils are he shall not be rich, though the labor is great to acquire riches. I don't care how you labor to acquire more riches, God's not going to bless you with more riches. Well, we know he was wrong later on, you know. And when we read down, and I think it's chapter 32, when we read down, we find out that God blesses him even more so. And then in verse 30, it says, he shall not depart out of darkness. And this is a continual affliction. So he's saying that God is not going to make you better. He's going to continue to afflict you, buddy. And the flame shall dry up the branches, means his children shall be cut off. So basically, this man knows that Job's kids were killed. And then he's going to make a prediction. Your kids are going to be, you died off. You ain't going to have any more kids. You're going to have, forget about it, man. Don't even think about trying to have any more kids. God's not going to allow that. He's going to dry that up for you. So all your finances will be dried up forever. All your children will be dried up forever as well. And verse 31 says, let not him that is deceived. So he's saying he has many vain imaginations of obtaining wealth, power, and pleasure. So he's like, you probably think that you're thinking vainly about achieving these things again. Pleasures and happiness ain't going to happen, Job. You're just deceived is what he's saying. You're trusting and you're basically living a lie. So just give it up, Job. Just face reality. God's not going to bless you anymore, buddy. You're done. Verse 32. It shall be accomplished before his time. I believe that the Vulgate translation gives the true sense. That's the Latin. He shall perish before his time, before his days are completed. And so basically he's saying, you're going to die. Yeah, you're soon going to die, buddy. And his branches shall be not green. There shall be no sison from his roots. All his prosperity shall fail. You're not going to have any more prosperity financially. You're not going to have any more children that breed. And your life is pretty much coming to an end, buddy. You're about to die. God is about to punish you for your evil. He shall shake off his upright grape. Whatever children he may have, they shall never survive him nor come to maturity. So it's like, even if you do manage to have kids, guess what? They're probably dying in the mother's womb, or when they're born, they'll die soon. Trust me, you're not going to have any kids anymore. God's not going to make you prosperous anymore with children. In verse 34, it says, the congregation of hypocrites. Job is here classed with hypocrites. So he's calling Job a hypocrite, or rather impious of all kinds, a congregation of a society of such shall be desolate or barren, like a barren rock. So fire shall consume the tabernacle of bribery. And then he's saying that he's bribed his way to his power. Another insult against Job, that he's perverted justice, he's perverted judgment, that basically he's taken bribes. He's done illegal activities. In other words, you were rich, you had $28 million, but I bet you got it illegally, buddy. I bet you did it through wicked ways. And then in verse 35, they conceive mischief. The figure here is both elegant and impressive. The wicked conceive mischief from the seed which Satan sows in their hearts, and producing which they travail with many pangs for sin and a sore labor. And at last, their womb produces fraud and deception. This is a cursed birth from an iniquitous conception. St. James gives the figure of full length, must beautifully touched in all its parts. When lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it's finished, bringeth forth death. James chapter 1, verse 15. And so now he's accusing Job. You lusted after all these things, but you did it. You created, you did sin. You know, you bribed people. You took advantage of the weaker people to get the riches that you have. And that's why God is afflicting you right now. So that is the end of that. Again, it's just one after the other false accusation against Job, and basically judging Job unrighteously. Because, see, God has already told us what he's an upright man, right? And he's a good guy, upright guy, and yet his friends use the world's philosophies to judge him. And you remember when we talked about nature when Job corrected them, and that's why we're going to wait to verse 16, because Job is going to correct them now. And he's spoken to spiritual about when we talked about nature. Nature doesn't seem fair, does it? Okay, so you see, let's say if you see a whale, you know, that's in the water, and then a shark comes up and starts eating that whale or the baby whale. And we'll look at that, and we'll look at, oh, that's not fair, or the lion, the pride of lion attacking the gazelles, that kind of thing. But that's nature, and God is the one that created nature. So there are things that don't seem right, but God has a different purpose and a reason for it. What we got, five? Okay, so at this point, what I want to do is open up the floor for those who want to speak in regards to the study of Job so far. Are we learning some things from Job? And if you are, somebody please let me know. What are the things, what are some of the things that you've been able to take from Job to actually help you in your life, your day to day? Because that's what this class is all about. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so he had the wisdom to understand, so it's a mindset. So can I be physically poor, but spiritually rich, and mentally rich? Okay, because again, I have trouble with this too, when I give in to evil, you know, and that means it just, I get to the point where I just see evil so empowered on this earth. It's just like they have got their tentacles in every branch, you know, of power. They're the ones with the trillions of dollars. They're the ones with the military power, the firepower. They're the ones that have political power, you know. And it just seems like they control the media. They control entertainment. They control our food. They control our water. They control our medicine. Goodness gracious. Controlling everything. And they want to control your minds, you know, and everything else. And so you get overwhelmed by it, but that's a mindset. So if I say that I am a child of God, which we are, if all of us here were akin to blood relations to the Queen of England, we walk a little differently. We think a little differently about ourselves because we would know that, you know what? I'm genetically connected to royalty. The Queen of England, let's say all of us were she was our aunt. Okay, we were connected to her, or we were cousins to us. And it was well known, and we could prove it, that we have a connection to the royal family. Each one of us in here. Wouldn't you think a little differently? Even if somebody looked at you bad, you're on the streets and everything, you're looking at them like, well, you know what? I'm actually connected to royalty. So if I wanted to, you know, I could just make a phone call, okay? I'm living on the streets, but I'm connected to royalty. Then it's a mindset. So your situation, exactly the same. You got zero in your bank account. You don't have a home. You're living on the streets. But something's different. You got a smile on your face. There's a little strut to your walk because you know who you belong to. Well, isn't it the same if we are children of God? And we worship the Almighty and we are His children? We are the children of the greatest power in the whole world, the universe, that has ever known. The richest king that's ever been on the earth, okay? He's richer than everybody, has all kinds of wealth. So shouldn't we walk a little differently, think a little differently? Yes, even in our situations that we're in, we're different from everybody else, okay? And that's the way we need to look at it. That's the way Job looked at it. That's the spiritual way to look at your all the trials and tribulations that we go through. It's the same. I'm going to live with the pain. The pain is every day, right? The suffering is every day. But my financial situation is going to be the same. You know, it may change, but it's right now it's the same. But this has changed. Okay? That's it. It's a mind change. Because the bigger picture is this. Regardless of what happens here, if I stay on a straight and narrow path, he's got a kingdom up there, okay? An everlasting kingdom. And a house for us, mansions. He says, our eyes, our mind cannot even imagine the things that he has in store for us in heaven. I mean, more riches than any gold, silver, diamonds, jewels that are on this earth. This stuff's going to burn away. It doesn't matter, this stuff on the earth. What matters is if you are ready, your soul is ready to meet your maker, and you go to heaven, it's worth it all. All the suffering that we suffer here on this earth is worth it all. Because why? Even if you live to 150 years old, your life on this earth is like a blink of an eye in compared to eternity. I'd rather have it bad here on this earth, okay? And then go to heaven eternally for the rest of all my days, eternally live in happiness and bliss with God, than to have good times on the earth and then burn in hell forever. That's not even an option. Anybody else? Any comments or questions? Yes.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed this study of Job because, you know, we learned in that first chapter that the only reason all this happened to Job was because God knew that Job would not curse him at all.
Right.
Right. So it kind of begs the question as to, well, you know, if I love God so much and I'm so upright and, you know, in right standing with Him, you know, why should I have to suffer all these things?
Exactly.
You know, for me, it's like it kind of changed my perspective on when things arise in my own life that aren't maybe what I had wanted to be, problems.
Yes.
The new perspective is, you know, just like Job would not even allow this because he knows he can't handle it. Without turning against him, mm-hmm. My whole new perspective changed. And then the other thing was that, you know, Eliphaz coming, well, you obviously got something going on with you, man, because you're not blessed.
Exactly.
This type of, you know, so in that begs the question, you know, well, how do I define blessing?
Exactly.
It really is a blessing for me because, you know, our minds tell us that, you know, big TVs, nice cars, and all this kind of stuff, and things, we define that as a blessing.
Yes.
But in reality, those very things that we think or we relate to being a blessing can actually hinder us from having the relationship with God. You want, for example, you got a nice big TV.
How much? 1 minute, okay.
You don't want to watch it, right?
Yep.
But what happens Sunday?
Takes all your time away, doesn't it?
Okay. So they actually hinder us.
Just like the lottery, when they survey lottery winners, tragedy, you know, happens to people that win the lottery. Horrible. All right, we're out of time, so let's go ahead and end this and just say, I'd like to say, may God add a blessing to the reading, the study, and the hearing of the word of, and his word this morning. God bless you.